जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद
जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय
नित्यानंद दीन दयाद्र नत हे मधुर नतकार लक्ष्यसे धीर्यं तत्लोक कातरं दयिता ब्रह्मयति किं करोम्यहम्. O my Lord, O my merciful Master, O Master of Mathura, when shall I see you again? Because of my not seeing you, my agitated heart has become unsteady. O most beloved one, what shall I do now? In this verse, Madhavendra Puri teaches how to achieve ecstatic love for Krishna. By feeling separation from Krishna, one becomes spiritually situated.
Prithivittarupankari gira premankura sei premankurera viksha chetanyatako.
Madhavendra Puri sowed the seed of ecstatic love for Krishna within his material world and then departed. That seed later became a great tree in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Prastava kailam puri gosaya nirjana yeyasana sevada bhagyan.
I have incidentally described the passing away of Madhavendra Puri. Anyone who hears this must be considered very fortunate. So, Madhavendra Puri was an exceptional devotee, because Madhavendra Puri showed symptoms of love of God like no one before him. He came in Madhva Sampradaya, and in that Madhva Sampradaya, generally speaking, the focus was on Varna Ashram, as is explained, and on attaining liberation through Varna Ashram. And therefore, liberation was very much in the foreground in that Sampradaya. And then suddenly, Madhavendra Puri had a totally different goal. He was not interested in liberation, and he was interested in prema, in love of God. And then he began to display such extraordinary symptoms of love of God that no one had ever seen anything quite like it. So Madhavendra Puri is a mysterious personality, because where did he get his love of God? It is said that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Namo Mahavaninyaya Krishna Prema Padayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Guru Tvisana Maha, that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came into this world to give what has never been distributed before. And yet, it was already there in Madhavendra Puri. So that is mysterious. See, once Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came on the planet, then everywhere we see how after him so many devotees are displaying this extraordinary love of God, and they develop a special type of kirtan which did not exist before. When the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for the first time in Jagannath Puri were displaying these activities of Sankirtan, Prem Sankirtan, It was so extraordinary, their kirtan, that people came running from everywhere to see it and to hear it. Just spontaneous. Nobody knew about it, but as soon as they heard that kirtan, everyone thought, what is it? And they ran to see. In this way, it is described that the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were all extraordinary. And they got their inspiration and their qualities from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But where did Madhavendra Puri get it from? Because he appeared on this planet before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Madhavendra Puri was the Param Guru of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His own guru being Iswara Puri. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never met Madhavendra Puri, because Madhavendra Puri left the world before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So where did Madhavendra Puri get this extraordinary love of God from? In the Chaitanya Charita Mahakavya from Murari Gupta, there it is explained that actually Madhavendra Puri was a Shakti Avesh avatar of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he appeared particularly for that purpose to become the great grand spiritual master of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Madhavendra Puri was the acharya in his time. There was no one who was quite like him. And his love of God was unmatched. It is said there was only one person on the planet who showed a similar level of love of God as Madhavendra Puri did. And that was Lord Nityananda. And when these two, somehow or other, met each other, when Nityananda met Madhavendra Puri, and when Madhavendra Puri met Nityananda, then they just forgot everything. Everything. They forgot where they were. They forgot about the world. They simply forgot everything. They saw each other and they realized that for the first time in my life, I'm seeing someone who actually has love of God. Madhavendra Puri had traveled to the world, but he had not seen anyone with equal love of God as he had. He saw people who were very religious, people who were very pious, people who would go to temples and worship deities. He saw dedicated pujaris. He saw great learned scholars, pandits, who were extremely learned, but none of them displayed the symptoms of love of God. Nityananda, the same. And when they saw each other, they immediately recognized it in each other and they went beyond themselves. They spontaneously embraced and then crashed to the ground, rolled on the ground, kicked and screamed. And it was an overwhelming sight. And all the disciples of Madhavendra Puri were looking at what's going on. So it was something. So Madhavendra Puri was a very famous acharya. And somehow or other, we can just think about it in our modern times. Srila Prabhupada was the big famous acharya who, by his extraordinary devotional service, somehow or other, was able to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world and convince Westerners to take up this way of life, which is not so easy. It's easy to say I'm doing yoga. It's easy to say I'm belonging to this Baba or that Baba and not make any change in your life. But what Prabhupada was asking was not just say that you belong. No, Prabhupada was completely change your life. 100%. Everything has to change. Everything, everything. Completely, so they say. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told us, he said, it is a complete revolution, Krishna consciousness. Complete. So, yeah, but isn't that a little too extreme? Can't we add Krishna consciousness to all the good that we already have? We can begin like that. It begins like that, but it cannot stay like that. Because little by little, we realize that all the good that we have is not good enough. Even the best in this world, how good is it really? Is it unadulterated? Is it pure goodness? No. In this world, everything is mixed. Everything is tinged with imperfection. And therefore, as one is advancing in Krishna consciousness, gradually there's no more room. No more room for imperfection. When Krishna is there, who's fully perfect and who has unlimited qualities and pastimes and so on, why preoccupy ourselves with anything else? Why look at the beautiful sunrise? In the early days of the Hare Krishna movement, Prabhupada was preaching in New York, and New York is one of those places where it's hard to see the sky due to these skyscrapers. When you're actually down in the street, down at Manhattan, you don't get a real view of the sky. That's just how it is, New York City. So Prabhupada was preaching there in his small storefront, bachelor's gift storefront, and one day they had an excursion to Dr. Misra's country ashram, and it is said that it was summer, and several of the city boys were sleeping outside. Well, that was amazing, I mean, for a New Yorker. And they were waking up in the morning, and they saw the sun rising. And Hayagriva, who was a bit of a poet, got really into it and started to say it was as if a painter from his palette had placed red streaks in the sky and in this way decorated it with a great variety of different shades of beauty. A poet, as you can hear. And Prabhupada was totally sober in his response, right? And said that actually we are not so interested with the beauty of the creation. We are interested with the beauty of its maker. So that's the devotee. The devotee is not interested in the sunrise or in the beauty of nature or in the beauty in a person, or even in a painting, a work of art. Ultimately, it's all pointing towards the beauty of Krishna. Everything is the beauty of Krishna. And this is truly the pure transcendental platform. This is pure devotional service. It's just Krishna, Krishna, and Krishna. And after that, Krishna, and Krishna, and Krishna. And when we're finished discussing Krishna, 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 we can talk a little bit about Krishna. Why not? So this is more or less the Krishna consciousness that is displayed by great, elevated, pure devotees. Not the kind of Krishna consciousness that is added on like a little sauce in life, in which we sometimes dip our different experiences to add some extra flavor. Not something to add another dimension. No, there is only one thing, that other dimension. It's Vyavasyatnika Buddhi Ekaha Guru Nandana. One becomes Ekaha Guru Nandana, totally fixed. It is said that the materialist, his consciousness is spread out over so many things. Well, maybe there is some enjoyment on the left, but maybe there is also some enjoyment on the right. Maybe there is some enjoyment in this, and maybe also in that, and how about that, and that, and that, and that's also not bad. And all these things I am collecting, and just because there may be on some occasion still a drop of enjoyment that can be squeezed from all these various experiences. This is normal consciousness collecting, 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 collecting. Yes, I need many, many things. Yes, I need more things. I have a need, a deep need. I need so many things. And there's no end. No end. And the old model is outdated, and the new model is in, and we can't wait. I need, I need, I need. Yes, that is the material world. But we see that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, once he began to display the mood of a devotee, that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a different mood. He was not interested in anything else. When he came back from Gaya, then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu resumed his teaching. At that time he was Nimai Pandit, and he had a Sanskrit school and many students that he was teaching. And he had gone to Gaya to on a pilgrimage, and now he was returning. And now he was displaying exalted devotional sentiments. All his students gathered, and then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as he began teaching, he began to explain one word, and he got into it, and he explained how this word was actually, how the roots of the word were actually related to Krishna. And then he said the root meaning of the word is actually Krishna. And then by that he became so ecstatic, and then he began to explain another Sanskrit word, and then he explained that that also meant Krishna. And he went on, and every word, he simply brought it back to Krishna. Everything. And the students, they were just shocked. If I would give a lecture, and I would just go really like that, Krishna, 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 and then a little more Krishna, Krishna, then after a little while, Krishna, Krishna, everyone would say, I don't know what he ate today, but I think he didn't digest it, or something like that. But that's what basically happened to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who began to explain everything as Krishna. And pointed out that there is no other meaning to any word or anything Krishna. It's logical. I can also explain in English. If we say fire, fire, what is fire? Well, fire is one of the material elements, isn't it? Bhumi abho nalo vayu kamana buddhi vicha ahankaramitiyame prina prakriti astada. So there are eight separated energies from Krishna, and one of them is fire. So now we have already established a relationship with Krishna, and that we are dealing here with the energy of Krishna. And then the verse that says, parasya shakti vividaiva suryate, that Krishna is manifesting himself in unlimited energies. So in this way, you can see how when I say fire, actually I'm speaking about Krishna. Actually we're speaking about Krishna. And in this way, in anything, we can say that we are speaking about Krishna. Name any example. Doesn't matter what it is. it all relates to Krishna ultimately. Everything has its origin in Krishna. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti mata vajantamam buddhabhava samvitaha. And the wise who know this perfectly, they worship me with love. Because to know it perfectly, one must also understand Krishna's purpose. Not only are we seeing how all the energy is connected to Krishna, but we are also seeing Krishna's purpose with all this energy. And we're seeing that Krishna's purpose with all this energy is to attract all living beings and to uplift them to greater and greater heights of ecstatic love. That is Krishna's aim. And whatever he is manifesting is leading to that purpose. And the wise who understand this purpose perfectly, they understand how actually everything is filled with transcendental love and mercy. Loving Krishna comes from seeing how Krishna is full of love. One cannot love a stone. It's not possible. One cannot love a piece of ice. It's difficult. Not for very, maybe in the summer a little while, but not for very long. Love is brought out from the heart by kindness and mercy. Yes. When there is kindness, when there is mercy, when there is great consideration, then love awakens in the heart like that. So therefore the devotee is seeing all the noble, merciful, kind qualities of Krishna everywhere in his creation, in the total cosmic plan, in the blueprint that Krishna has designed. Well, this is one way how we can meditate on Krishna. And we can see that the great pure devotees are not only meditating like that, they are absorbed. They are not just knowing it. See, when we are discussing, then we sort of intellectually catch on with the idea. All right, that was a nice idea. Krishna, everything is actually Krishna. Everything is his energy. Everything is connected to him. And the wise who know this perfectly, their hearts are filled with love. Nice idea. But for us, it's still theoretical. It's only intellectual. We don't realize it within the heart. And because we don't realize it within the heart, therefore our whole Krishna consciousness has a certain amount of dryness in it. And this dryness in our Krishna consciousness it makes it a little difficult to really become absorbed. And of course we hear that we should be more absorbed. We should be absorbed in hearing and chanting. And we see that like Haridas Thakur was chanting 300,000 names every day. And that means never a day off. Maybe we can take one day and really get serious about chanting. But then maybe we want one day to go to the zoo or something else, something to relax, and now it's enough. It can't be always full on. But we see that these pure devotees exactly are like that. They are kirtanya sadahari, always, always absorbed. So therefore for us, that is, this concept of absorption is theoretical. Well, I wanted to introduce a theme. A theme where we have a need. A need for an acute need to experience more taste in our Krishna consciousness. Once upon a time, I was traveling around the world and I came to a particular town or city which was on the coast, and I went to the local temple and the temple president wasn't there, and I asked where he was and they said, oh, he went to the beach, okay? And then they said, 3 days ago. 3 days ago? I said, yes. And he never returned. So, being from the Netherlands and having a thing with the sea, I naturally took advantage of the situation to go to the beach. And I went there. And yes, I saw him, and he was sitting in front of the ocean, staring out over the water. Well, I sat down next to him and didn't say anything. And after about 15 or 20 minutes, I said to him, nice view, isn't it? And then, well, you know, from one thing, gradually another, and we wound up with a whole conversation. And then he started to reveal his heart, and what it was, what it really was there was a question that hit him. And the question was, who am I really? Yeah. And that question had come into his mind, and that question remained in his mind and had been in his mind for 3 days now. Well, you could say an acute identity crisis. It happens in this world. Some people indeed suffer from an identity crisis, and also it happens to devotees who at one point just after years of practice of actually following devotional standards according to the Shastra as outlined by Upa Goswami, and seriously engaging in hearing and chanting and in cultivating devotional service, some people get this identity crisis. Why? Why? What is it? Because all along they were in a Shakespearean production. They were somewhere on stage acting out a role. But somehow or other, it didn't really hit home. It didn't really connect to their feelings. Yes. That can happen. Maybe this particular case was a little extreme. I don't think that there are many such stories of people who went to the beach in Krishna consciousness. Not that. But others are showing the same symptoms but to a lesser degree. But still wondering, you know, who am I really? So Krishna consciousness, if we really want it to happen for us, we have to make it meaningful. Meaningful, first of all, for Krishna. Because we're doing everything for Krishna. And Krishna also means the spiritual master, because he's the representative of Krishna. Then we have to make it meaningful for the world. Maybe some people are doing big things and want to change the world, and maybe some people say, well, I'm only a small timer, I just do something small. But everybody has to mean something to someone. Yeah? If you don't mean anything to anyone, then why do you exist? Then life becomes empty and depressing. So life has to, whatever we do, has to be meaningful to the world or to someone in the world. And finally, it has to be meaningful to ourselves. Of course, when one becomes very Krishna conscious, then these three all come together. It becomes one. Then whatever is meaningful to Krishna is meaningful to the world and meaningful to ourselves. And pure devotional service is exactly that. But sometimes we don't experience it. Sometimes we do what is meaningful to Krishna, maybe what is meaningful to the world, but we ourselves feel, is this really touching my heart? Yeah? Is it really meaningful to me? So, first in Krishna consciousness, there is duty. Duty must be there. We have so many duties. Duties to the spiritual master, duties to principles of purity, duties according to the scriptures, duties given to us by the acharyas, and it governs everything. The time we rise, and duty must be there first. If duty is not in place, then there is something hollow, and then there is a vacuum in our spiritual life. And when there is such a vacuum, then our bhakti cannot really grow. For some time, it may look that bhakti grows very nicely, but if there is a vacuum remaining in our duty, then all that bhakti that emerges so nicely will at one point just collapse. So the duty must be there. And one cannot say, I have no taste. I have no taste. Someone entered into a whole discussion with me about chanting and said, I have no taste for chanting. So I stopped chanting and I just have no taste for chanting. I said, okay, that's very nice that you have no taste for chanting, but what does that have to do with it? Yeah. I mean, the point is that it attracts mercy if you're chanting. You know, we may have no taste, fair enough, right? It may be tough, it may be difficult, but it attracts mercy, Krishna's mercy. That is why we're chanting. Not that, I'm chanting and I'm hoping to get a higher taste now. That's bonus. That's only a bonus. But the chanting attracts mercy. So that's a reason to faithfully chant. So duty is like that. One must chant because one will, one must chant faithfully. Taste or no taste, tired or not tired, inspired or not inspired. But we chant because by doing so, especially we track the mercy. If you only chant on the days that you feel inspired, you'll attract some mercy. But if you chant also on the days when you're not inspired, you attract more mercy. Because Krishna is seeing, look, he's making such a sacrifice for me. This person is making such a sacrifice for me. Although it's such a struggle, still doing it. I must give this person some mercy. Like this, that's there. So duty must be in place. we may think, well, I'll just follow my taste. Why not? I love to paint. So, instead of chanting, I just paint every morning. I make paintings about Krishna. Oh, and it's like I'm totally absorbed. It's like it's my life and soul, this painting. Oh, I love it. And time means nothing for me whenever I paint. And I paint only Krishna. So my painting becomes completely something spiritual. And that's my way. See, that's my way. And everyone has his own nature. Since I'm a painter, that's my way. And I feel so enlivened to focus on Krishna in my way. Great. I'm all for it. But before or after chant your rounds, that's also there. Because when the duty is not fulfilled, and the rounds are not chanted, or other duties, principles are not followed, when a vacuum remains, then one day, as our taste for our devotional activity that we like so much, my painting will grow and grow and grow. The weight of that that growth will just crack the vacuum that we left behind, and suddenly it will break. It will have a major identity crisis in our Krishna consciousness. So if we want to avoid an identity crisis in Krishna consciousness, then at any cost, we must put the duty in place and protect it, and care for it. And that means it needs an environment. It needs an environment where it can flourish. It's like, in the Netherlands, we had one person who was always there in the programs, and who then, but who lived in a city somewhere else and was always coming from a distance, and then come on Sunday to the temple programs, and then he one time told me that on Saturday he would go to the bar. And I said, Saturday go to the bar? What are you doing in the bar? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's not a place for a devotee. It's not so helpful for developing our devotional mood. It's another mood in bars. And I said, like, you know, bars, I mean, it's about drinking, smoking and sex, and that's what you do in bars. That's what bars are for. He said, no, I don't drink. I only take orange juice. So for years he was chanting Hare Krishna, going to the bar and only drinking orange juice. But now we don't see him anymore. I think one day he met someone who said, come on, have a little tequila in your orange juice. Good stuff. I'm afraid that's good for the germs. Like that. It's hard. Obviously, you have to protect. One is to protect one's spiritual duties. So the right environment is important. But my talk is not about duty, because duty is the prerequisite. That is in place. And ultimately, it's not... Our spiritual life is not just about duty, 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 heavy duty. It's not that which is what we are aiming for. I'm aiming for a lifetime of duty. That's a bit much. A little while, but a lifetime of duty. It gets very heavy. That could be another reason why a person after some time would get an identity crisis. Just as if you have to unload a truck, and there are bags on the truck of 20 kilos. Well, the first ones, you know, you lift them up a few times, no problem. Second one, the first 20 bags are okay. But at bag number 30, it starts to get a little heavy. Right? And bag number 20, bag number 100, then those 20 kilos start to weigh very heavy. Yeah, very heavy. Yes. So in the same way, duty over a long period of time can become heavy. It's just always austerity, out of duty, out of austerity I'm doing this. I know it's better, I don't feel it, but I'm doing it. So therefore, with time, if we just function on duty alone, we become vulnerable. And some people came to an identity crisis and I can't do it no more, and started to look for more naturalness. And then that naturalness, well, you know, I am what I am and I have to be honest about it, and you know, what's the point of living with a facade? And you know, anyway, I love you. Wow, what a coincidence. I love you too. And well, you know, it's actually a beautiful thing, although it's Maya. And what can you do? Right? And then it goes like that. We want to go beyond the call of duty alone, although duty is important, and I've established that. But we have to also develop something. I am thinking about such things because sannyasis, they put themselves in a somewhat tight position, right? Because nothing is allowed. See, when you are a regular devotee, well, if the ingredients are bona fide, no worries, then it's okay, right? Doesn't matter, you know, whether it comes from the supermarket or not. If the E numbers are the right E numbers, go for it, bona fide, you know. But as a sannyasi, you have to also think, like, what is the consciousness in this? Who has prepared this? Has it been prepared with love and devotion by great and pure devotees? And has it been offered nicely and so on? All these things. And if all that's not met, then you're sort of supposed to say, no, that's all right, I'm fine. I don't really need. And then everyone else is sitting there with the ice cream and the chocolate crunch, and you know, well, you can't be fanatic, you know, a little bit of chocolate crunch, come on, you know. And did Srila Prabhupada really say that chocolate is not bona fide? Some are saying that he didn't. And in fact, you know, I have heard that there are sannyasis in America that eat chocolate. No, really? Really? Wow, where did you read that? Well, on Facebook. Wow, amazing. Fantastic. Well, here we go. A little grated chocolate, grated on the ice cream. Wow. It's good. Yes. But as a Swami, it doesn't quite make it. It doesn't quite make it. The vow doesn't really allow for that. Of course, if it's part of something that's offered with love and devotion by someone who's hosting you, sometimes, maybe, but you eat a round chocolate crunch and dig the ice cream from under it. But it's not ideal. So, in this way, It's a narrow path. I'd like to compare it to a tightrope. High up is the tightrope. And there, on that extremely high tightrope, and there's no net, there, the artist is walking. People are holding their breath, and some people wouldn't mind if he would fall. And they're just in case. And then, yes, when you're up there, there's no looking down. One must look straight ahead, along the course, straight to the goal, and one is completely focused. The foot, yes, goes down with the heel, and one's consciousness is in the heel, and then slowly the foot is turning down towards the toe, and as the foot is turning, the mind is turning with it, and not for a moment can one space out. Sannyasa is something like that, right? It's walking on the tightrope. It needs complete absorption, complete focus. Therefore, and because there is no room for anything else, one doesn't have to worry. The ashram itself is meaningful for Krishna. Oh, the world. The world is waiting. The world will give you main stage. The world will give you spotlights. The world will draw tickets. The world will make you famous. The world will sing your glories. The world will shoot your photos. The world will put you on YouTube. And the world will glorify you. The world will bow down. The world will take you the dust of your feet. Don't worry about the world. That part's falling into place. The most dangerous part is, in the midst of it all, is it meaningful to yourself? It's easy to put on the dress, to put fabulous tilak, to wear lots of strands of neck beads, and a 9-string Brahmin thread. That anybody can do. But then the rest, to make it meaningful to ourselves. So for sannyasis, naturally this becomes a little more acute because they have less other outlets. That's why sannyasis come with such points. But they're equally relevant to everyone else if we want to maintain spiritual life and don't want to slip down back into the material energy again. Still have attachment to Krishna, but gradually losing more and more principles and then just going for spontaneous attachment. But we will not rise above the bodily platform and will be attached to Krishna and attached to Maya. And then, yes, it will be us that Prabhupada referred to, that many of my disciples and followers will go to the heavenly planets. It will be us. Reward, yes, lucky you, you're getting the reward for all the good things you have done in devotional service. This is what you always wanted. Oh, I'm so happy. Now I'm on the heavenly planet. I can't wait to go. But you can't stay. One day, it will be all over. And then, that day, you'll be very attached to that heavenly enjoyment, which is much better than what you got here and now. And that day that you fall down from the heavenly planets back down to this earth, Ksine Punya Marcha Lokam. Bodhisanti, that day you feel extreme pain. Will you sign? I don't know. If you present it like that, maybe not. Maybe not a good idea after all. Then there is no other way. So, yes, let's make it meaningful to Krishna, meaningful to ourselves, and meaningful to the world. These three. Let's do something in these three areas of concern so that we can gain strength. The duty is meaningful to Krishna, but I can also do things for Krishna that I like the painting. And I can paint or write poems, as Hayagriva used to like, or make music, as Kedambakarana Swami likes, or someone, or something. Some people, they love to put their fingers in dirt, right? In the earth. Feel like my connection with the earth, and they love to grow vegetables and all these things and plants. They are in ecstasy when a cauliflower grows and grows bigger and bigger, and when the pumpkin gets a prize for being the biggest one in the district, right? Their ecstasy knows no bounds. One can grow pumpkins for Krishna if that's what you like to do. If you want to grow pumpkins for Krishna, then you can. So in other words, here it comes our nature. We can do something that we like to do and connect it with Krishna. Yet karu si yet tasnas yet juhu si dadat yet tapasyati kunti atat kurusvamat arpanam. Ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is explaining this point. Verse 27, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you give in charity, do all these things as an offering to me. So, this verse in the Gita is the Karma Yoga verse. It is particularly describing you do what you like and offer it to Krishna. But that's not the highest, isn't it? That's called personal motivation. Isn't the highest what Rupa Goswami says? Anyabhilasitasunyam jnana karmani anabritam. Isn't that the highest? Yes, it is. And it's so high that most of us are really not there, isn't it? And therefore, for most of us, yet kurus, yet asnas, yet juhus, yet adat, yet etapasis, ikuntia, tat kurus, vamadarpanam, makes a lot of sense. To do something we can do, something we like to do, and do it for Krishna. And gradually it will get purified, because gradually we start to care more and more about Krishna, until the point that we don't even like to do the things we like to do anymore, if it's not for Krishna. Yeah? Then it has become purified. Then that karma yoga has become bhakti, pure bhakti, yes. Like that. Therefore, my proposal is not out of line. The proposal to pursue our taste after our duty is fulfilled, and to actually do some things that we really like to. So many people have only practiced devotional service and as a duty without allowing themselves to follow any taste. It's not the last mile. Just surrender to my duty, Dashkarayam. It's both. Duty is required, and to fo- follow our taste is also required. The next part of following our taste is not only following it, but discovering it also. For example, we know that Srimad Bhagavatam is described to be the literary incarnation of Krishna. So Srimad Bhagavatam has all the opulences of Krishna, if it is the literary incarnation of Krishna. Everything is there. All the opulences of Krishna are there. So therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam must be full of taste. But we have to go and find it. We have to go and discover it. And one point is that there may be some things that we all share in the Srimad Bhagavatam in terms of taste, but then there may also be things that are individual, things that particularly we like. You know, I was reading.
One second.
Reading about Dhruva Maharaj. And there are many interesting things about Dhruva Maharaj. One thing I liked was how when Dhruva was a bit older, then he was on the throne, and one day a yaksha, yakshas live in the Himalayas and are into witchcraft and tantra and mystic power and all these kind of things. And once a yaksha killed Dhruva's brother. Then Dhruva went into the Himalayas and he took revenge and he started like fighting there. Now in a way it was his duty as a king to revenge, because a king has to show strength. If they attack one of your people in the country, of a country, then you have to show some strength in return, to show like you can't mess around with this country, otherwise the country will become harassed later on. So that's part of politics. So kings have these duties. So it was his duty as a king to retaliate. But there was more. He was also angry because it was his personal thing. It was his brother. So he, you know, the guy has killed my brother. So he took action. And then Dhruva got a bit carried away. He had a bit of an issue with anger, which at times would get the better of him, and he just started killing yakshas one after another. It's like just too many. So much so that at one point his grandfather, who was Swayambhuva Manu, a great saintly personality — the Manus are residing on higher planetary systems. Anyway, Swayambhuva Manu appeared. And then Swayambhuva Manu, and this part I like, Swayambhuva Manu was like so wise. He was so wise because he was so otherworldly. He was so totally detached. He was so completely focused on the eternal world that he was not involved at all in the pettiness of material relationships. See, material relationships are all small, and there's a little bit of happiness, and then there's some distress, and then, you know, and then there's this desire, and then there's that desire, and then sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work, and then there's this frustration and that frustration, and it's all just like that, like a can of worms, as they say, or as they say in Shastra, you'll get stung by bees or wasps, yes, and drones, and that's the material world. And then you see Swayambhuva Manu, he was totally not affected Dhruva was a devotee. But Dhruva was at that stage much younger, and he was a devotee who was involved in working with the world. And he was and therefore, although he was a devotee, he was also experiencing the trouble of the material world. But Swayambhuva Manu was elder, and Swayambhuva Manu left it all behind. And Swayambhuva Manu was simply absorbed in the eternal reality. How nice. What an amazing consciousness he must have had. So I like that. Someone else may read the Dhruva story and take something else out of there. You know what I mean? Someone else may say, well, I also like that Dhruva story, and I like particularly how death came and bowed down before Dhruva, and then Dhruva just stepped on the head of death and used death as a stepping stone and went straight into a Vaikuntha plane, and then he just flew up in the air. And as he flew up in the air, then Dhruva was saying, wait a minute, what about my mother? Ah, oh, I like that one, someone might say, right? Mothers might say, or I don't know who might say what. Everyone has his own taste. So my point is that we have to go and discover the Bhagavatam. It is a personal experience. It's not a lesson to be learned. And dear devotees, sit straight now and pay attention, because the Swami is going to explain to you how to understand the Bhagavatam. And if you're going to pay full attention, then I'll point out all the ecstatic points to you. Yeah? It's not entirely like that. We have to go on our own journey. If we're not doing that, if we're not developing that relationship with the Bhagavatam, then there will be a vacuum. Another vacuum. A vacuum of taste. And all these things, all these different vacuums, vacuum in duty, vacuum in taste, may bring us one day to the beach. Who am I really? Well, this is only the beginning of a topic, an introduction. Obviously, this lecture can't go on forever, and it's sort of the story goes much further. It doesn't end on the beach, right? Rather, the story goes past the beach, and the story goes to the point where we actually begin to discover the positive inspiration and a treasure house of wealth. Of daivi sampada, of spiritual wealth. But that part of the story I cannot cover now. So this lecture ends on the beach, but not the story. The story carries on, and the story is a success story of filling our spiritual life with a wealth offerings to Krishna and of tasting mercy. That will be there. But for now, I'm leaving you on the beach. Well, see where it goes from there. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
I was thinking now, very often I depend on others for my faith. And like, you know, I expect them to lift me up from my conditioning, and I seek devotees' association to give me that faith. I mean, and obviously it's not really long lasting because I am back with my own conditioning. So I don't know, is it a question, but I like, is it the right attitude or completely wrong?
It's not enough. It's certainly good to look for inspiration in the association of devotees. But no, we must also learn to find it when we are completely alone. If we always try to fill a vacuum by being with others and hoping that something inspirational is going to happen, then each time when we are alone, we fall back in a vacuum. No, we must learn to also appreciate Krishna's presence when we are alone. He's here. He's always here. He's really there. We're never alone. Krishna is there in all his magnificent glories. So where there's a question of having to go to anyone, we're already with Krishna. See, in any relationship, there's always a third person, Krishna. And he is by far more inspiring than any other person. It's Krishna that is the most inspiring person, actually, in any relationship. So we have to remember the third person is always there. And ultimately, that's the one. That's the one we are really taking inspiration from. So it's like Prabhupada is talking about friendship, and Prabhupada is saying, actually, Krishna is your best friend. Yeah? And someone said, Prabhupada, you are our best friend. Prabhupada said, I'm not your friend. He said, we can only give each other friendship to the extent that we give each other Krishna. That's friendship. If we don't give each other Krishna, that's not friendship. Right? So it's like there may be so much inspiration. We're rolling over the ground. It's so much fun. And so many, and it's having such a great time. Yeah, but if Krishna is not part of it, then it has no meaning. And in fact, it has a detrimental meaning. Takes us away. So somehow or other, we must practice our relationship to go deeper in appreciating our relationship with Krishna. And then from there it goes. So that's also there. And that's why chanting. You know, some people say that they like kirtan better than japa. And in fact, a lot of people would say, if they get very honest. Well, that's no wonder. That's obvious. Because in kirtan or bhajan, whatever, we are sharing the energy. And we're feeding of other people's energy, you know? It's like the whole group lifts you up, right? Everybody just together is creating this amazing energy and atmosphere, and you just feel swept up in it all. You go through this for a while, and then you come home and say, well, yeah, that was good, you know. Now I can go again for 3 days. Yeah, that's okay. And then japa, you know, it's like, it's just heavy, because in japa, you are confronted with yourself completely. In japa, you have to face who you are. You know, you're sitting in a group, you can be ecstatic. You can be like, because the whole group is ecstatic, I'm also so ecstatic. You know what I mean? But when you're alone with Krishna, his holy name, then we become confronted with who we really are. Where we are. And that's not so good. We're far from Krishna. That is the situation. That's why japa is more difficult. Yeah? But exactly in that japa we must go, because then we are alone with Krishna, and now we go before Krishna, and now we beg, Krishna, I have no taste. Krishna, my offering is poor, but Krishna, I want something. I want Krishna praying. Please give it to me. I know my offering. I'm offering only broken names, but give it to me anyway. I know I don't even want to pay the price, Krishna, but please give it to me. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. I have no love, Krishna. Please give me this. I want a taste of this Krishna praying. See, we are beggars when we are chanting. Then we are beggars. And we have no capacity to chant. So we take shelter alone, all alone, chanting in the holy name, knowing that now I am associating with Krishna. And in this chanting, the amazing thing happens that we make an offering to Krishna. And at the same time, we get a darshan of Krishna. It's quite amazing how these two can go together. We're offering the name to Krishna, at the same time Krishna reveals this to us. And the more we get into making the offering, the more the darshan starts happening. And we try to chant nicely and hear at the same time. And then the whole element of offering and darshan begins to happen. Then we might get some mercy in the chanting. And then we'll actually become gradually a little bit spiritually self-sufficient. See, as a spiritual master, the first thing you want is you want to make your disciples spiritually self-sufficient. You don't want to become like the flying doctor. In Australia you have the flying doctor. He flies around from farm to farm to save people. And here is the flying guru. Flew in just in time to pump up our enthusiasm. Right? God, it was almost flat. There was no air left. But thank God, Guruji came. Yay! We can go again, you know, till the next time. I hope he's coming in soon. No, it can't be like that. We need to become spiritually self-sufficient. We need ourselves to go to the source, the lotus feet of Krishna. We need to ourselves go before Krishna and try and make a devotional offering to him. Yes, that's it. I don't have a taste for chanting. To hell with your taste. I don't feel inspired. To hell with your inspiration. I don't like chanting. Couldn't care less what you like, you know what I mean? You don't always get what you like, you spoiled little brat. Don't you know? Haven't you learned by now? You haven't grown up yet? You still don't know that in life you don't always get what you want? It's like that, right? I don't care what you... But I don't feel like it. To hell with what you feel. Just do it. Just do it. Seriously. Not do it. Okay then. God, I gotta chant 16 rounds. Okay. No. Seriously. Now seriously. Yeah. Become serious. Sit down and really chant. Like, as nice as you can. For once, not for ourselves, but for Krishna. Let's just offer it to Krishna. Please. Okay, I'll try it for you, Krishna. Not for me. I'm not doing this for me. That's for sure. I'm doing this for you. And then, well, maybe some something will happen. That could be. Yeah, you have a right of reply. She has a right of reply, according to the law.
Just a quick, this attitude, you know, I'm offering a broken whatever,
names
and service, but I still want the highest reward. I have a problem. It's, you know, this. I'm brainwashed, but I always feel like I have to deserve.
Yeah, I know you're right, but still, you want the highest. I'm not saying that's how it should be, but it is how it is. We don't want to work, and we want everything, and then we feel guilty also about it. That's an added feeling. You added another feeling to make it a little more complex. You just added some guilt as well.
Yes, my question was that when you start chanting and if you get like a reciprocation from Krishna and you start like feeling his energy somehow, and then people will start telling you that you're crazy or stuff like that. How can you like know that you're really not crazy?
You have to keep certain things to yourself. I mean, many things we just keep to ourselves. And how do we know whether we're crazy? First of all, we don't talk so much about these things. And then the next thing is that whatever we're experiencing is not complete. If we were complete, we would be on the level of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Madhavendra Puri and Rupa Goswami. That's complete. Yeah? So our realization, whatever it may be, is always incomplete. So it needs to still become more purified. So we just carry on. We keep it now to ourselves. And then go further. And it gets more purified. And it gets more sharp. You know, it's like the focus, right? The lens. Still better focus. Like that will happen with the realization. It will go deeper and more clear, crystal clear. And that's what you see, like in Prabhupada. Not only was he so deep in his devotion, but so crystal clear. You know, with one sentence, just cut through all illusion. So, as one goes deeper in his realizations, one also becomes more and more crystal clear. The focus becomes more sharp. Like that. But our realizations, we should keep them private. If we talk too much about them, maybe people will say we're crazy. Maybe what to do. Maybe we are crazy. But anyway. Everybody's crazy. And gradually we're becoming a little less crazy by chanting Hare Krishna. Papa.
You're mentioning this, nobody might do their duty over a long period and might come to a crisis where satisfied doing the duty. But if you do your basic duties in a pleasing way, you know, there is
pleasing to
Krishna. You know, there is this verse with the said of Krishna. I mean, one reason why you don't experience taste in doing japa or normal duties, that Krishna's not reveal himself. You cannot perceive Krishna. This is verse in the Nectar. You cannot perceive Krishna by material senses. So, but when he's pleased by your service attitude, in doing, then he reveals himself. And so that might also happen in that you do. As in my experience, there are certain things I don't have such a personal taste for, but I've done it over the years and years. actually becomes tasteful just by somewhere or other doing it over and over again. And also, I guess also this point of Rupa Goswami, that you should do your duties, but you should do it with understanding.
That's what we're talking about. So duty is there, and we do the duty. But it's natural that if we do the duty with understanding, that attraction will develop. Mm. But some people, are becoming a little rigid in they become overly attached to rules and regulations, which is called niyamagraha. They are they're not allowing the heart to come in, and such people are often becoming dry in time. Well, of course, if they're very sincere and make a real sacrifice for Krishna, then they'll get mercy. So within duty, when we are pleasing Krishna and make a sacrifice for Krishna, we get mercy. Then everything may be revealed automatically, absolutely. And that is there. And Prabhupada also taught like that. However, at the same time, we see that there are many people who did have an identity crisis in time. We see so many people who are not exact, who are initiated, but who are no longer following their vows, and who lost the inspiration to follow the vows, and yet they still have a sentiment for Krishna and Prabhupada, but they're not following the vows. Then you say, what happened here? What went wrong on the way to heaven, as they say? And so I'm responding to that kind of development, and I'm offering an answer to that. Your point is well taken. You know, it is a fact that if we are sincerely doing our duty for the pleasure of Krishna, and if Krishna is pleased, then automatically everything will manifest. And that is in itself enough. But maybe we are doing it, making spiritual life a duty, and we're not so serious about that duty, and we're just struggling with the duty, and in that way not getting so much higher taste, and then still struggling and struggling at a minimum level or almost below the minimum level, and then at one point we become more slack and we are functioning a bit under the minimum level, and then one day we just say, this is just too difficult. Then you go to the beach. I'm trying to cheer you all up in the winter here, talking about the beach and make you feel better. It is pretty dreadful. Okay, I've used a lot of time. So thank you very much. I hope you find some inspiration in this presentation, some food for thought. We will carry on in the next few days. Tomorrow morning, I in courses I won't give a class because I'm pushed a bit too hard. And today is a long day. I left at 7 o'clock, and I'm still sitting here going back to course. I'm gonna be very tired tomorrow. And on Thursday, I fly to South Africa, so I think I need a little bit of a break before we break. Yeah.
Tomorrow is also, you come for the evening?
Yeah.
It's Varahadev's.
No worries.
Yeah.
In the evening I'm ready for all that, but not in the morning. sorry. Okay.